This is Dr. Gary Collins. I'm a psychologist, and it is my privilege to introduce this tape. This is a tape about divorce. It was prepared by William Secor, professional counselor and faculty member in the Department of Counseling and Psychology at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. This tape was not meant to replace a counselor, to answer all of your questions, or to solve your problems for you. It is intended as a supplement to counseling, an added plus which your counselor would like you to hear and to discuss during some later counseling session. We know that this tape can be helpful to you. Listen now as Mr. Secor talks about divorce.
It is somewhat difficult to determine what would be the most valuable information to a person who is undergoing the process and most likely trauma of a divorce. Indeed, there are several different reasons an individual may be going through this experience. For the purpose of this tape, we will try to be helpful to those we will refer to as the reluctant divorced. My counseling experience has indicated that those who seek counseling help during or after the divorce situation are those that did not wish that the separation occur. Often these remaining partners are up in the air about many of the things regarding the divorce process and the following single life. The reality of the split and the loneliness or helplessness brings many to the counselor for answers to the problems which face them. I will try to make this tape a source of information for the counselor and counselee trying to work out the marital difficulty, usually without the cooperation of the spouse initiating the breakup. It is hoped that the information will be valuable to both sexes, as it is recognized that men as well as women find themselves in the position of being left by an angry spouse. Recently, someone discussing this problem was quoted as saying that 15 years ago, 300 husbands ran away for every one runaway wife. By 1975, it was reported by an organization, whose business was to find missing persons, that they were called on to look for 1,800 missing wives in comparison to 1,000 missing husbands. It is obvious that there is a sociological shift, and the change is in the women who are deciding to break up the marriage when the pressure gets too great. Also, the old idea that church people are not involved in divorce situations is no longer true. Possibly one of the first questions to come from the counselee to the counselor is, "How did this happen to me?" They will often indicate that they were aware that attitudes were changing, and several of their friends went through a divorce, but they did not feel it would happen to them. Not because their relationship was without problems, but it was felt to be well enough to be stable and permanent. Well, even though we cannot describe every particular and individual situation which comes into a counseling center, I have observed certain common dynamics that occur in many of the marriage breakups that I have dealt with. I would like to share some of the typical behaviors which seem to reflect many of the counseling situations that I have worked with in the past. Possibly through the description of this type of relationship, you will be able to discuss some of these dynamics with your counselor and gain an understanding of your marriage and what might have affected your own relationship. Let me describe this situation now. Somewhere along the line, one partner recognizes that coping with the relationship in the marriage is very difficult. Possibly emotional closeness or sexual contact is disappointing, or at least not up to a pre-marriage idealized level. The tension increases in this partner to a point where a decision is made that the other partner is at fault and the marriage will never work. The other partner is never communicated with about these negative feelings in order that the problem can be worked out. Often an event will occur which will later be identified as causing the initial decision to someday break up the marriage. Whatever the event may be, it will occupy a high level of personal importance in the mind of the spouse desiring the termination of the marriage. The reason I suggest personal importance is because it, as an event, may not be remembered by the partner. If it is remembered, it was not considered to be of any consequence at the time of the occurrence. In the later phase of the marriage, when the relationship entered a different stage, it was not recognized as contributing to the difficulty. This personal event may be as innocent as observing the spouse in an awkward social situation, comparing the spouse with a former romantic interest during a chance social encounter, or the spouse disagreeing with a decision to buy a sports car, or spend money on an unneeded object. Personally or subjectively, the anger is held in, but the resulting emotions become part of the initiator's lifestyle. This starts the marriage into an unfair, interactive relationship toward a future breakup. The unhappy partner becomes an injustice collector, starting with this supposedly important hurt, and proceeds to build up a portfolio of evidence against the unsuspecting spouse. Although the spouse may realize something is wrong with the marriage, there are never enough specifics available to identify the exact problem, and therefore the marriage continues status quo. The angry spouse, suffering silently and deeply, goes along on the outside, but on the inside is looking for the day the breakup will be announced. The unaware partner usually continues a normal pattern of life and therefore hurts and disappoints without being aware of it, yet somehow feeling the marriage is not quite right because the angry spouse is not giving clear enough signals to be picked out from the events of life. The shock will come when the angry spouse will suddenly move out and file for a divorce or announce this intention. Attempts at counseling are often futile, as the one breaking up the relationship either refuses counseling or provides a superficial cooperative attitude to show that outwardly everything was tried. Often the angry one presents a very detailed list, written or remembered, of dissatisfactions and are usually set in what they are going to do. The actual breakup may have been triggered by something which was a final straw event or by the growing interest in a new romantic partner. Sometimes the new interest forces a confrontation by being discovered, or the initiator does by a guilt confession, which brings everything out in the open. Many times the one initiating breaking up the marriage will go through a period of baiting the partner into arguments and fights which have a double purpose. First, it may cause the passive partner to leave or request a separation, and this often relieves possible developing guilt. Second, it may also be a concentrated effort of padding the subjective injustices in order to justify their own leaving when it is explained to friends, relatives, and church, etc. It is not unusual to observe the initiator looking like the victim and gaining much emotional support from friends who wonder how the situation was tolerated so long, as the injustices may have been communicated to friends and relatives for quite some time. An angry woman once told a friend, "If I had any guts at all, I would leave tomorrow and never return." The baiting method is often used to justify the intellectual guts needed to act on a decision made a long time ago, possibly years, and never acted upon. Attempting to counsel this situation can be frustrating to the counselor and the reluctant counselee if the ground rules set by the initiator are not recognized. The counselor can easily fall into a trap detrimental to the surprised partner. First, the goal of most Christian counselors is to bring the couple back together again. But in this type of situation, pressure from a counselor may only become another reason to feel hurt and angry and compound the decision to leave. There are situations in which a reunion will occur, but unless the angry partner recognizes his or her game and the destructiveness of it, the reconciliation will later become proof that I have tried everything. Second, the client, who is almost always the passive partner, comes to the counselor with the feeling, "I must be doing something wrong. Tell me what to do." Usually, the list of injustices used to announce the breakup causes severe self-blame in the remaining spouse, who will often feel all the blame is really mine. It is important that a counselor should always caution the guilt-ridden partner not to try to atone for the guilt by giving away the rightful share of personal property, savings, or agree to settlements without the advice of a lawyer. Often one will see this guilt situation bleed a person dry in the hope that this new loving and understanding attitude will win back the initiating angry spouse. On the other hand, the initiating spouse usually feels justified with receiving an inequitable share by the rationalization of, I deserve it after all I've put up with. Whether or not the described process relates to your situation, the process of divorce causes those going through one similar emotions and experiences. This is especially true of the one not wanting or expecting this to happen. The one coming for counseling is often the person who is having difficulty coping with the breakup of the marriage and is unable to handle the overwhelming emotions which are usually caused by the suddenness and unexpected announcement that a divorce is coming. It is hoped that the counselor can provide objectivity and bring healing to the marriage. This is usually dependent upon the cooperation of both partners. But even in situations where one partner is not cooperative, some marriages can be healed. I once heard a speaker say, "If I can change even a small portion of an unhappy relationship, I know that it can have big effects in the family down the line." The thing to avoid is behavior or emotions which will confirm the initiating partner in the decision to continue the breakup. Unfortunately, the worst things to do when the marriage is threatened are often the easiest. When faced with threat and hurt, it is often second nature to punish and hurt in response. It is normal to be anxious, depressed, fearful, hurt, and experience many other unpleasant emotions during the time of divorce or marriage difficulties. But it is important to guard against behavior which would be counterproductive to the goal of rebuilding the relationship. I would like to point out several common mistakes that many often make on the basis of emotional reactions to the hurt and anger which comes out of divorce. Number one, it is easy to be influenced by sympathetic friends who tell you, "I wouldn't take that. I would tell whoever it might be to get out if it were me." This may not be what you want to do, but you could be influenced by not wanting to lose their friendship, or more possibly by a temporary bravado, and do some irreparable damage. Keep your friends. You need all the support you can get, but make contacts with your spouse with less of an emotional reaction. Many a person following a friend's advice in that direction finds that if the friend ends up with a similar problem, they often do not act the way they advised. Number two is it is easy to want someone to punish your straying partner. This is one situation where it is not wise to let it all hang out. In a bid for sympathy and acceptance, some reveal every misdeed and incident to both family and friends and succeed only in closing the door for the partner's return. Often intimate details of their sexual life is exposed to these close friends and relatives, and the result may be too much of a loss of face for either or both of you to reconcile. Curb your desire for vengeance and punishment. Often one partner will want to know if I let the other know what the Bible says about the problem, or did I explain the consequences of sin. Sometimes it is necessary to do that, but usually it is out of the desire to see the spouse squirm and be uncomfortable. If you do get a friend or a pastor to tell off your mate, its pleasure for you will be temporary, and it may forever close the door for positive help from that person to your mate in the future. The Apostle Paul recognized this human desire for revenge and instructed the Roman Christians to refrain from giving back evil for evil and to leave the vengeance in the hand of God. A good principle to follow if there is any desire for future reconciliation. Third, it is easy to let your imagination run away into all sorts of fantasies. This can be destructive to your well-being and the need for objectivity in dealing with a breakup. Imagination can convince you that your mate or ex-mate is out enjoying life while you sit and suffer personal and financial loss. This may be another form of desire for revenge or the building up of hate for what has happened. You do not know what the other is experiencing, and it really detracts you from ordering your life and go on living. It is a fact that divorce affects the standard of living of both, and dwelling on how good your mate has it can be the worst thing for you in handling your emotions adequately. Even if your thoughts turn out to be true, what purpose does dwelling on what you cannot change serve? Number 4, it is easy to use the children to get at your mate or to use them for a source of information. Children are torn apart when the parents split up. They feel their loyalties are tested and that they are expected to take sides. If they are civil to one parent, the other often accuses them of unfairness. A good approach with children is to let them know you are aware of the conflict that they are experiencing and that you will not use them to punish your spouse. Talk freely about your hurts and expectations, but do not use them to satisfy any unhealthy needs. Be aware of their hurts also, but avoid trying to be both parents in order to make up for the loss of the other. Often children going through a family divorce will exhibit what is known as regressive behavior. This means going back to a more immature level emotionally and in acting out. You will see them often acting more immaturely than in the past or become more withdrawn from life. Others will turn their anger on the parent they live with. Fortunately, this is usually temporary, but it is a time of trial for one or both parents. I have seen some parents, even though divorced, maintain a unified front in helping the children through this. It takes a great deal of self-control and maturity to set aside anger and hurt, to work with one another, but it can be done. These are times a family counselor, pastor, or mature friend might be able to provide a listening post and counsel to the children. Although these negative reactions are common, and I could mention others, I would like to make several suggestions which have been found to be helpful by those going through the process of divorce. Some of these should be discussed with a counselor as individuals vary and have distinctive needs and apply truths in different ways. My first advice to a person who comes in regarding an unexpected breakup is to find a good lawyer. By good, I mean one who is competent and his practice indicates familiarity with divorce cases. Often friends who have been through this can recommend someone they used and were pleased with. Counselors sometimes refer to lawyers specializing in divorce problems. Or if you are still up in the air, the local bar association should have a referral list. Find someone you feel comfortable with and one who will answer your questions. Remember, your spouse probably has had quite a bit of time to line up a lawyer and consider all the factors involved. This is a sudden decision for you, and by trying to rush you into something, your spouse may be trying to get unfair advantage. Do not be frightened by the legal language in the papers that are served on you. They will make it sound like you are a first-class failure, but they are not the final decision nor necessarily factual. Let your lawyer work out differences of opinion on who owns or gets what. If your spouse has done a good job making you feel guilty and ashamed, you might be tempted to give anything away to atone for your imagined sins. Courts and lawyers are supposed to determine what is fair and equitable according to law. Unfortunately, inequities do occur, but a competent lawyer will lessen that chance, and a lawyer represents legal protection. Second, I would like to advise women about preparation for life alone. It has been estimated that alimony, child payments, or support money continues for about 4 years before the husband defaults in one way or another. If you are fortunate enough to have payments or a settlement large enough to allow it, consider returning to school for advanced training. You will eventually need to play a large part in your future ability to make it financially. It is wise to devote a few years to that training. Consider your past education. Can you build on it? What would you like to do? Is it in reach of your circumstances? There are many fine technical programs available at local two-year colleges. They are well aware of the needs of women who wish to re-enter the job market. Running a household for a number of years is more difficult than many jobs that you can train for, and it represents an indication of your competence and ability. If you already have a degree, you might consider graduate training. Age is usually given as an objection to return to school, but I have counseled many who have started college or graduate school in their 30s and 40s. Your own mental attitude towards self and life will change as you meet and interact with others who are growing and preparing for life. Your earning power will increase with your level of education. Next, I would encourage you to maintain your relationships with your church and other Christian support groups. Although you might wish to take off and leave the place of all those bad memories, do not be hasty to remove you and your children, if they are with you, from familiar Christian fellowship and influence. Some counselors suggest not making any important life-changing decisions, that you don't have to, for at least a year following a serious trauma. This would certainly apply in a divorce situation, but of course every situation must be judged on its own merits. Remaining in an atmosphere where you can get emotional and spiritual support should be considered. Consider also the fact that many churches have a variety of programs to keep you involved with personal associations and may even provide you with a ministry. A pastor who is familiar with you and your situation is better able to provide you with counsel than someone who has just met you. You might be reluctant to seek new friends or even to start in a new church as a result of your emotional downs during the time immediately following a divorce. I am often asked, why doesn't my partner feel as bad as I do? Is there something wrong with me? Well, there are two aspects to this question. The partner breaking up the marriage has often spent a long time, possibly even years, contemplating this step. The actual breakup process represents the achievement of a goal and in some sense brings a feeling of relief. The reluctant participant often was unaware until a relatively recent date that this was the way the marriage was moving. The suddenness and the shock of the revelation throws emotions into a turmoil, and this, coupled with the unfairness of not having a chance to work things out, adds frustration to the depression and hurt. Many times the reluctant partner perceived the relationship as okay and continued to love the initiating spouse and still may while a divorce is finalized. Then, it is also normal to have the bad feelings that go along with divorce, separation, and the death of a marriage. Some counselors feel the death of a marriage is more traumatic to an individual, and I will add to a reluctant participant, than the death of a spouse. Many would agree with this. Beware of your friends and relatives who add to your bad feelings with statements which make you feel guilty or weak for experiencing normal grief reactions to the loss of love, home, and possibly security. Grief has a normal process to follow, and you shouldn't feel inadequate or inferior because you experience normal reactions to a reality situation which produces them in you. Some would have us believe we are inferior Christians because we sorrow in sorrowful situations, or we are anxious in frightening and insecure situations. Job's comforters are still with us. Do not neglect the most important resource available, your commitment to and relationship with God. It is often true that a time of trial can bring us face to face with the real meaning of life and the insecure aspect of what we put our own trust in. I have counseled many who entered into a new and deeper relationship with God through the spiritual strength that comes from a new commitment to Jesus Christ. If you are going through an unwanted divorce, consider the biblical statement in Hebrews 4:15 that tells us, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin." When we feel completely alone, Psalms 27:10 reports that even when mother and father forsake us, He will be with us. It is my hope that those of you who are going through the types of difficulty described on this tape are able to pinpoint some of the dynamics which may have caused the problem, or at least may be contributing to the problems, as you see it now. You might wish to go back over the tape and take some notes on points which may be discussed with your counselor, and possibly determine if any corrective action can be taken, even at this stage of the relationship. If not, I hope that the tape would be of some help in relieving any unnecessary guilt or blame you have placed upon yourself for something that may very well have been beyond your control. One thing for certain, divorce never keeps a person who wishes to serve God from serving Him. We may not be able to serve Him in some of the ways we could have previously, but God is always there, ready to give a ministry to one who truly wants to serve Him and have fellowship with Him and a ministry to perform.
This concludes Side 1 of Bill Secor's presentation on divorce. On your guide sheet are some questions for you to answer. When you have answered these questions, turn over the tape and listen to Side 2. On Side 1 of this tape, Mr. Secor talked with you about being a reluctant, divorced person. He talked about the question, how did this happen to me? He talked about the difficulties of the breakup, discussed some mistakes that people make when they're facing a divorce, made some helpful suggestions about dealing with a divorce, and concluded with some comments about your relationship with God. We would like you to listen now to an actual counseling situation with somebody who is struggling with the question of divorce.
Fred, you mentioned on the phone that your marriage was in trouble.
Yes, Pastor. I should have come in sooner, but Grace said we could work things out without letting everyone know we were having troubles. Well, now she wants a separation and time to think things over.
Well, this is a surprise, all right. You two never gave any indication of trouble.
Grace feels I don't relate to her. She says I'm happy in my job and she's in second place. And since she took her new job, she's been more and more distant.
Is there anyone else in the picture?
Not on my part. And I doubt it very much with her. She resented our last move, and I agree with her that my job takes too much time, but life is like that. She knows I'm trying to be a success for both of us.
Will she see me and talk about it?
I don't know. She says her love for me just got less and less. Now that the children are in their teens, she wants to be on her own. She wants me to move out. I guess I will. She is right. It looks like my interest was in work.
Wait a minute. Why this moving out so fast?
Well, she's right. And maybe she'll see that I am concerned about her feelings and want to do what she asks.
Okay, Fred, I see what you mean. But you could show her you've changed by being at the house, too. It's been my observation that once one partner moves out, it's very difficult to get them back together again.
She keeps telling me if I really cared for her, as I say, then I'd leave.
Look, first let me see her and have a talk. Let's see her point of view and evaluate after that. I'll contact you in a day or two.
On your guide sheet, there are several questions about this counseling session. Why does Fred feel he should leave home? How do you feel about that situation? What does Grace's declaration suggest about her freedom to share feelings? Do you think she might have had these feelings for a long time? What might be Fred's difficulty regarding talking things out? What makes some men devote so much to their jobs to the detriment of their families? How might this be worked out in your family? It would help if you could stop and write down some answers to these questions before we continue with the tape. Divorce is painful, very painful. It can thoroughly disrupt one's life, one's routines, one's feeling of self-worth, and one's sense of security. It can affect people physically, psychologically, and spiritually. It can lead to emotional upheaval, irrational decisions, and interpersonal tensions. It affects the two people involved, but as you well know, its influence can extend to children, parents, other family members, fellow employees, friends, neighbors, and people in the church. Based on his contacts with hundreds of divorced people, Jim Smoke has identified three overlapping stages through which people go when they face divorce. First, there's the shock stage. This is when the person recognizes that it really isn't happening to me. The marriage that began with optimism, hope, and happiness has been replaced with dazed feelings of emptiness, resentment, and confusion. As with all other shock, people facing the shock of divorce react in a variety of ways. Some withdraw from social contact. Others talk about the details with everybody. Some retreat within themselves. Others get busy in a frantic round of activity, which might help them forget, at least for a while. Some feel guilt and failure. Others feel smug and bitter. Regardless of the reaction, before there can be growth, there must be an admission that this really is happening to me. Stage two is the adjustment stage. This involves, first, positive mourning, that is, the experience of remembering the good and happy times in the marriage. Secondly, negative mourning, which involves the experience of swimming in a sea of self-pity and guilt. And thirdly, the assembling of pieces, which means picking up the demands of life and learning to live without a mate. Then, in addition to the shock stage and the adjustment stage, there is a growth stage. Here, people honestly face the reality of their new status in life. They set time aside for meditation, reading, prayer, and personal reflection. They get involved with other people. They deliberately resist blaming others or themselves. They try to fight self-pity, and they seek God's guidance for making realistic plans for a new future without their old mate. Mr. Secor has made some suggestions for the ways in which you can deal with this growth stage. Ask your pastor for the name or names of someone in your church who has successfully coped with the process of an unwanted divorce. See if you can meet them, and if they can give you hints on how they coped with their difficulties. What suggestions do they have? Possibly you can even start a group with several members from your church or from some neighborhood churches, and together you can meet to encourage and help one another. Many times divorce creates a difficulty with a person's self-concept, the picture they have of themselves. A good way to bring you back into perspective is to see what the Bible teaches about an individual like you. Ken Smith has written two Bible study books published by InterVarsity Press, Learning to Be a Woman and Learning to Be a Man. You might want to purchase one of these and try to find a friend who will share in this study with you. One issue which I'm sure is of concern to you is the question of whether or not you are now free to remarry. This is a question which is debated among Christians, and I'm sure you'll want to discuss it with your pastor or with your counselor. Perhaps, however, it might help for us to consider the comments of Dr. John R. W. Stott, who summarizes the biblical view which is commonly held by many evangelicals. First, he writes, God's intention in creating mankind male and female and in ordaining marriage is clear. Human sexuality finds fulfillment in marriage, and marriage is meant to be a permanent and exclusive union. This is the divine purpose and ideal. Secondly, divorce is nowhere commanded or even encouraged in Scripture. Third, nevertheless, divorce and remarriage is permissible on two grounds. First, an innocent person may divorce his or her partner if the latter has been guilty of immorality. Secondly, a believer may acquiesce in the desertion of his or her unbelieving partner if the latter refuses to go on living with him or her. In both cases, however, the permission is granted reluctantly. Only if a person divorces his partner on the ground of unchastity is he not committing adultery. Only if the unbeliever insists on departing is the believer not bound. To these comments of Dr. Stott must be added two additional conclusions. First, the Bible says nothing about the divorce of two non-believers. Clearly, this is undesirable since it violates God's one-flesh ideal, and since it often involves adultery, a behavior which is always wrong, regardless of the person's beliefs. Nevertheless, there are no specific divine guidelines for non-Christian divorce. Then we must emphasize the importance of forgiveness. God hates divorce and forgives adultery, but these are not unpardonable sins. God forgives and expects his followers to do the same, and then to live lives that are pure and free of further sinning. He expects us to forgive one another, and he expects us to forgive ourselves. This ends side two of the tape. Don't forget to return the tape to your counselor and to take along any notes that you have taken or growth activities that you have completed while listening to the tape. The examples on this tape are either fictitious or used with the permission of the people involved. Any resemblance to people that you might know is purely a coincidence.